This is Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam, NFL Blitz, and Mutant Football League saying, you're watching video game bullshit. Kaboom!
Hi, this is Eugene Jarvis, and welcome to Video Game Bullshit!
Welcome to episode 120 of Video Game Bullshit.
Here. Yes.
Right here.
We survived another week.
And we actually recorded within a reasonable amount of time, which is unlike us. How unlike us, Tristan.
Hey, man, we gotta make the effort. That's all it is. and then hope that everything lines up and neither of us get sick or family doesn't come into town. I was actually almost out of town today, so it just worked out. Everything worked out.
Yeah, I was like available early, and I'm like, okay, I'll start working on some book stuff. And then you got back, and I'm like, I need to eat something because I intermittent fast from 8 p.m. to noon. Yeah. And now we're recording, so yay. It's been a crazy week gearing up into Halloween. So London's going to be an axolotl this year.
Axolotl?
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Animal.
Uh-huh. Thing. I was like, yeah. Why does that sound familiar? Is that a Pokemon? But no, it's not a Pokemon.
And she was going to go. We did like a, at work, at, you know, my unit, we did a trunk or treat and a haunted house and everything on Friday. Uh-huh. He decided she would rather go see the Five Nights at Freddy's movie.
Really? Really?
And she went with her friend and she said it was the best movie ever.
Dude, that's funny. Okay, yeah. One little like side note, because I don't have kids, obviously. Trunk or treats. Is this a new phenomenon? Because like... This is coming out of nowhere for me. I've never heard of these before, and they're everywhere.
No, I think it's definitely newer within the last like 20 years. But essentially, the trunk or treat allows like a community to get together and just, you know, have a bunch of trunks that you kind of design. It's kind of like when conventions came around, gaming conventions, same deal. You know, lets people
you got
get
your
together.
Own booth.
Yeah, kind of. And then people like designed their trunks to have stuff. Like one guy did trick or treat. One had a clown with the head going spinning. And, you know, allows people to do crazy stuff. And it also allows kids to have like multiple Halloweens at that point. Because you do the trunk or treat like, last Friday. We're recording on a Sunday, which is like 2 days before Halloween. And then on Halloween, the kids will go around to actual houses and stuff. Because the other thing you got to keep in mind is, like, out here, especially in Hawaii, there's a lot of apartments. So the apartments, the kids aren't necessarily going door-to-door to knock and trick-or-treat here. So then, like, my daughter was talking about linking up at the mall, but I was like, we have a neighborhood here. So you just bring your friends here. We'll trick-or-treat in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Dude, before I forget, so, like, every Wednesday and Saturday – my local game store, Ben's Game Zone, like does like a drop of like new stuff. So that brings a crowd of people. Well, every, you know, the Saturday that's like closest to Halloween, he always has like a, you know, Halloween kind of thing. So he encourages people to like dress up and he gives incentives like prizes and stuff like that. Well,
cool.
A friend of mine told me or asked me if I was going to be there and to make sure that I was there. So I'm like, okay, what's going on? He's a little over the top. He's a former Marine. He's like a realtor now, which is, I mean, like you've met Marines, you know, Marines. Yeah. He's
head in the jar.
Something like that. He's got this. It's funny. Cause he's a former Marine and he talks like one, but then he's got this like professional, like realtor persona that are complete opposites. But anyway, so he kind of went over the top with this Halloween thing at Ben's Game Zone yesterday. Mm. He comes in dressed as Sweet Tooth from Twisted Metal. I mean, like decked out, man, like perfect. And not only did he come as Sweet Tooth, he brought an ice cream truck with him.
A full ice cream truck.
With ice cream in it, like treats that people could have.
It's amazing.
Yes. So I hope he won. I didn't find out like who won the costume contest, but that's some dedication.
I mean, if he didn't win with the damn ice cream truck serving ice cream, I don't know who would win.
I know. Seriously, I'm going to have to show you the pictures. It's pretty epic. Like he's Sweet Tooth, like handing, you know, ice cream out to kids.
Well, we could pop it up on the video here, like.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that in post.
Also, if you notice, I have a different background today because last week I ended up like pausing during our recording. So now I'm near the extender in the house since my wife moved her work computer to a different room. So I'm in the spare bedroom now.
Did you see what I did to you when you froze?
No.
Oh, you didn't check it out? So I put those, like, you know, that meme where, like, they'd put the shades on somebody? Well, the shades, like, slowly lowered and then, like, they were over you. So it's pretty funny.
I mean, I'm shady.
Sure.
It's craziness. So it was interesting yesterday. We ended up going, and I wanted to go to a couple of the used places around the area in Hawaii. And the last time I went to this one awesome used electronics store, they had a couple of Game & Watches. Mm-hmm. And so they had a Donkey Kong 2 Game & Watch, and they still had it there when I went there yesterday. And it was like $75, and I'm like, cool, that's a decent price for one of those. I went to look at it, opened it up, the screens are all jacked up to the
point. Yeah, that happens to a lot of them. Like, they're just all inked out, and yeah, it's bad. Those LCDs.
But I did find something else that was cool there. I found this, which I thought was pretty rad.
Ooh, that's cool. Mega Man freaking Zero. Chibi Zero.
Yeah, it's like little Chibi Zero. It's just like Mega Man, though, which is interesting. It doesn't say Mega Man X.
Yeah, that's like the original Mega Man logo.
And it's cool because like this like opens up, and so you don't have to ruin it to take him out. So I'm going to put him on my desk in my little game area. Like the game corner that my wife gave me. And then in the spirit of Halloween, I did pick up something from Super Rare Games. I don't know if you are tracking their mixtapes that they do.
I do. And yeah, I saw that they put out a new one. So
a horror one.
Yeah, that's cool. So, oh, yeah, they actually changed the design too.
Yeah, and I like that they do these. It's a little USB a set looking thing that you just plug in and it like runs on your computer and you can play a bunch of indie titles.
I love that.
The fact that they did a horror edition, I the little sticker I put over the thing. I love that they did a horror version, and I always support these because we're directly supporting the indie developers with Super Rare is one of the good ones out there. Love what they do. And definitely supported that. And I did pick up this finally.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I still need to pick that up.
So I played the first world. Sonic Superstars is excellent. It reminds me a lot of original, like the 1, 2, and 3 of Sonic, but like a little, there's like it's got a speed thing in there, which the original Sonic did not have. But once you got to Sonic 3, it did. So there's a focus on speed. There's like lots of little 3D pieces in there. And I just went through and played the first world just to get a taste of it, and excellent game, absolutely excellent.
Did you get to the
play for homework?
Oh yeah, sure, for sure. It'll give me an excuse to get it. Yes. Did you get to the part where you're chasing the Chaos Emeralds, like the bonus stage?
Yes. Okay. So I got to see 3 of the bonus worlds in the first level. So I got the Chaos Emerald, and essentially you're like jumping and swinging on a 3D vine.
You know what it reminds me of is American Gladiators. they're swinging from like ring to ring. The whole time I was looking at it, that's what it was reminding me of.
And it's not bad. There was a game we played for premiums called Get to the Orange Door, and it reminded me of the actions. Reminding this was like year one of Frame a long time ago. A game that we ended up not, the stars didn't align for us to sign it. But essentially, like, as you're going through, it's pretty easy, and I could see how they could make it challenging later. What was cool, though, is after you got that Chaos Emerald, then you got a power-up. And power-ups are set to the right stick, the right analog stick, and you can choose them. And so this one, you press the X button, and there's a bunch of Sonics that go all around, which is what everybody's seen online.
Oh, very cool.
I got that within the first, like, couple minutes of playing the game, which was really awesome. Then if you get the 50 rings and you go through one of the checkpoints, you get the classic, spiral jump in there. And it has the Sonic 1 rotating maze.
Oh, cool. They brought that back.
And you get, it's, it's three levels per rotating maze that I found so far on World 1, and you got to go and collect these Sonic coins. I haven't gotten to a point where I can use Sonic coins yet, but I'm assuming you can unlock things with it. But either way, that was pretty cool to allow, and it controls way better than the original Genesis version, which is awesome. The third thing that I found was there was these warps, and then like Sonic's like falling or rising, and it's like kind of like a warp through a dimension to another spot in the world, which I thought was weird. And then I noticed that there was like a pear sitting there as I was running, and I saw it, and I figured I should go get it, but I didn't. And I think that unlocks a bonus stage for that world. So there's only two, 1-1 and 1-2, but there's a bonus stage to
it. Okay, yeah.
And you got to unlock it, which is cool. It gives me a replayability reason. So really cool. I fought the Robotnik at the end of the stage, and that was fun too. And it's exactly the Sonic that I would have wanted. It's a good follow up to Mania, but it's 3D, so it's like a new version, which is cool. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely good. I saw somebody, I mentioned it last week, somebody was dogging on it. There's no reason to dog on it. It's good.
Oh, it's, yeah. Everything I've seen so far, like, I liked. And someone mentioned to me that the boss fights are really good. I never saw one of those, but yeah, like, Sonic boss fights are always pretty solid.
Yeah, this one was like a big old, the big old Robotnik robot, like at the end of Sonic 2. And then there was a second phase where he's, like, flying around.
Oh, cool.
And then I just hit the Chaos Emerald multi-sonic and like killed him. That was pretty funny. I had, like, a bunch of Sonics everywhere, killing the one in the air.
Well,
I
was just gonna say, like, I'm excited that they actually like did something with the Chaos Emeralds and like give you different abilities instead of, you know, just like collecting them to become supersonic, and it's just kind of one dimensional like that. But that's the way it always should have been, I think.
So, ironically, though, I did that, but I didn't really play much Mario Wonder since we recorded.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm in, like, the sixth world or whatever, but that's where I kind of stopped there when we were recording anyways. So, I haven't really played any Wonder. But I did get something that I want to play that I ordered a while ago that I finally got in. And I don't know if you've heard of these, but it is the Nintendo Switch, like, console holder, and it's the limited edition stuff. So it's this, Tristan.
Oh, yes.
Very cool. It's the nice little Nintendo Switch.
Dang, that looks like nice.
The whole console.
It almost like turns it into a the Wii U gamepad. Like, it kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah, and these things are cool. The website, it like wants you for these, and I don't know. It's like CRKD is the company name. And there's like a little thing right here that'll unlock, so you can take the screen out. And essentially, you have to turn on the Pro Wired controller. But the interesting thing is that when you play this, it's like holding an actual game controller.
Yeah.
It's really cool. The actual analogs are traditional analogs, and you can take off the analog toppers too to replace them with other ones. So there's like
that's cool.
One that has like a little tactile thing. There's one that's smooth. I kept the smooth one on the left, and then the tactile rougher one on the right for the pieces. The one thing that's interesting though is that these the L2 and R2 are springy.
Hmm.
And there's no analog L2 and R2 on the Switch.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't think there was.
Yeah, so it's interesting. The other thing is like this little light right here lights up. And if I turn it on, the interesting thing is that you can see it like glows right here through the plastic. Yeah. So I thought that was very interesting that it glows through the plastic a little. But this thing's awesome. You can set, there's like four little quick buttons that you can set to any button you want to for play, that you can mess around with. And so far, super comfortable. And there's a traditional D-pad on it. But the collectible aspect's interesting. So they have like this QR code with the box. You scan it, and then you register on the website, and you get like achievements for collecting and buying all of their versions. But it's just like,
oh, that's interesting.
One or a white one. This one's Super Nintendo colored, which is why I wanted it. They have a GameCube one, which looks pretty cool, the GameCube one. But outside of that, there's nothing outside of just variant colors. So I don't see a reason to have multiple, and they're like, you know, $60 to $80 a piece. So
sure, yeah. I mean, like, and I could see if it was like an established third party brand, like Hori, maybe.
Yeah.
But you know, it's kind of a weird move for them to do that. Whatever. It's kind of an extra fun little aspect. It doesn't cost anything. So
well, the other interesting aspect is that it has an input and an output on the back. So you can like charge it, but you can also like hook your phone to it or whatever to charge your phone after once you have it plugged in. The other interesting thing is that, you know, they released this thing at the tail end of the Switch. So you would think this would have came out a while ago. It would have been cooler.
Yeah.
I just don't, but this thing's cool. I like it. I've been playing it so far. I played my daily dad-ish on it, and it plays real well with the buttons are nice and responsive. The D-pad is great. The analogs travel well. All the button presses are good. So far, no complaints at all. Yeah. The last little piece that I got, because I got a lot of little stuff this week, Tristan, is when I went to pick up Sonic, they had something sitting up above. And it was sitting there, and it was a day one edition, and it looked like Super Nintendo box. And I'm like, it looks like our retro edition from Premium.
Oh,
and
no.
It's this game.
Oh, yes, that very much does look like ours. What the heck, man?
This is by Marvelous and Xseed Games. It's Silent Hope, which is a role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dungeon crawler role-playing game. Something I won't have time to play, but the fact that they had something that looks similar to ours, it's bigger than a Super Nintendo box. Oh. Also, the interesting thing is, it looks like they just printed on a readily
available for sure, yes,
stock box. So they just took the box, just printed over it, and because it's like literally the corrugated or whatever you say for the box.
Yep.
Like it's not a high quality box. It's just like a corrugated one, which is very interesting. But I also do like when people do the Super Nintendo boxes. They also have nothing on the top and the bottom. So very, very interesting. But it was $50, and it comes with a soundtrack and a little mini art book, kind of like what we do.
Yeah.
So pretty cool, though. I do like when developers do it, because there was an interesting YouTube video that I saw that talked about with Best Buy and now Walmart discontinuing physical games in 2024, that they're going to need companies to do higher quality releases with manuals and everything to stay afloat, to make sure we preserve physical. And I'm like, oh, I mean, you know, that's been the business model of Premium the whole time.
Yeah, we're already there.
And we see a lot of companies like taking, you know, jumping on and taking, you know, reference on what's already been happening at Premium, which is cool. And this actually goes into the one news thing that you wanted to talk about. The Annapurna collection?
Annapurna, I think. Annapurna. Yeah.
So essentially that is another one from our friends over at Fangamer. And it seems like they took tribute of our retro boxes for Tunic from our first series, and now they're doing a collection of games. But this is like 12 games. I think 6 of them had individual physical releases already.
Yeah.
And then the other versions, I'm not sure if there's 6 or less that have not had a release. But there's 12 games in there.
No, I think you got that exactly right. I think it's 6 and 6. Like 6 had releases, 6 did not.
And then it's 12 games in the collection, and it's like $200.
$200.
One thing is I had multiple people hit me up, and they're like, hey, so there's 5,000 in the U.S. minimum print run, and they're claiming they're only doing 2,500 copies.
Yeah.
So interesting. Either they're going to do a standard release that's not $200 later, just the case, because I think theirs has like the slip case again, like they did with Tunic, and a little booklet or something. And like it's a little booklet, like a manual with a saying from every developer, which is exactly like what we've done.
Oh, good night. Come on.
Yeah. All right. Cool, though. But that being said, the 2,500 only is like promoting the FOMOs as much as.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And especially with that $200 price point, it makes people think that it's going to be a scarce product just because of, you know, one, the low print run, but two, also the price point. I'm not sure if I would have done anything differently or what I would have done if I wanted to do something differently. But to me, I don't feel like they're going to sell out.
Well, the thing is when you see a multi, people want a release as a singular price. So mm-hmm. the fact that they did a single cartridge or whatever as a multi pack, people are like, well, this should be like $40. And that is just the way.
$200, though. $200.
That's just the way that the world is now, is that, you know, we do, you know, our standards for $40 and our retros for $60. And mm-hmm. that's with a CD and an extra Super Nintendo box and a goodie in there and all this extra stuff for $60. When we do $100, you're getting a giant thing with a hardcover strategy guide and all this extra stuff.
And yeah, and you know, like I know, you know, behind the scenes, we know the quality of the games that are in this collection, right? But mm-hmm. to the average consumer, they don't go past the price. They're like, you want me to pay how much? And then they don't yeah. care. So it's a big ask. It's a big ask for people to understand why they're paying that much.
The interesting piece is, too, is that, you know, those games themselves don't interest me, so I wouldn't pick it up either way because I pick up games interest me. However, same. Since we both work on design for premium, the Annapurna collection or whatever it's called, collection, is just an A on the cover. That's the art.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
that's to me, it's like, because when we did the Pigeon Dev Games collection, mm-hmm. which is like a collection that we did off of a developer that's even less known than Annapurna, which I can't even say their name, and they're also like yeah. indie as well. But sure. at least we did a collage of the art on each one to make right. it pop. And it's still challenging because there's not a unifying format for all those games to make a holistic, interesting cover.
No.
And so this, they just put an A on it, and it's like, okay, but I'm not super. And it's what? Who did this? Was it IM8-Bit did this, right?
It was IM8-Bit. And, obviously the A is for Annapurna, but, you know, how much brand recognition does that company have, right? The average gamer doesn't know Annapurna from, I don't know, Devolver.
Yeah. Well, and I would say Devolver has a higher threshold.
that was just the first one that popped into my head. But Devolver, I think, has enough brand recognition to demand something like that or make like a
and
crazy.
And Devolver, though, is a publisher. And
that was a bad example. But you're
right. But either way, though, it's like brand to brand to brand to brand. And it's like, mm-hmm. no, it's not Konami. It's not. You know, so that's the interesting thing is I know a couple of our team members really want to push doing multi-carts. And every time I'm like, it's a bad idea, unless it's literally a part one and part two of the same game series. Like, yeah. it would be
mm-hmm. like same like universe the, or something
like when
like
the
that.
Trine series, the Trine 1, 2, and 3, which was the GameStop brand that they did. I mean, all three yeah. games on one cartridge, Trine 1 through 3. That makes sense to me.
Sure.
But like doing stuff like a random smattering of games that have no unifying thing just because one person made them. It's like,
it's yeah, then you're asking. Yeah. Because, you know, if, yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're doing a shotgun approach where like maybe one of the five games appeals to somebody, but then you're asking someone to pay $60 for what they view as a budget title because, you know, it's just 1/5 of the cartridge.
Yeah. Well, exactly. So it's, I mean, and I get it. I think the $200 price point comes from including all of the games. And if you had signed all the games yes. individually, it'd be super expensive. But a lot of those games may not have gotten an individual physical release either. And then if you look at what they go for digitally, I did not. But if you do, and any of them, if they're like dollar releases, that's when people will also, you know, be very critical. Yeah. And it's. And so, like, it's a very, you know, tenuous thing. And the fact that the Switch is in the twilight of its, the twilight of its console life cycle, it's why we're being very you know, very, you know, slow and very prescriptive on what we are publishing with premium and the games that we're going with, because we just want to have really cool stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, that actually brings up another point. Like, I was talking to someone about this at the game store yesterday, how, you know, we're at the end of the life cycle, just like you said, and, you know, the print run, we know that the minimum print run for a Switch game is 5,000. Well, limited run, huh? Oh, in the U.S., yes, in the U.S. But, you know, and I don't like to speculate against other companies and how they're doing, but limited run, you know, they haven't slowed down on how many releases they're doing. Well, maybe they have since their peak, but they're going to be sitting on a surplus at some point. So they're going to have to slow down if they.
Oh, I don't think that they're going to. They have been for years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Guarantee. Sure. Yeah. They have been for years.
Yeah. Because I think that's safe to say. Yeah.
But like my theory is with limited run, and I have no intel on it, is that with the merger from Embracer Group and them buying out limited run games, they had a backlog of independent games that they literally were just pumping out pre-orders for in order to get out there, because Embracer is likely having them focus on retro re-releases and major IPs. And you've seen it recently with major IPs constantly coming. So I'm not sure what type of control or say limited run games now has with Embracer Group there. I know online they had mentioned they still have full autonomy of their company and all that. However, we've seen a shift. And the ramp up was likely when they were working on this deal to show a massive influx of cash coming in, which also then subsequently overwhelmed all collectors, because there's no way in hell we can keep up with freaking 2, 3, 4 releases a week. That's That's insane. And that was just Switch. And so there's no way. So they kind of single-handedly caused the collecting scene to slow down. And that being said, when we have 2,500 copies of a collection from IM8-Bit, there may not be 2,500 holistic completionist collectors out there, because that's the other piece that you're looking at with a less impactful multi-cart release, is you're going for them completionist collectors, and there might be a few hundred out there. There might be 500 out there, because the difference is Limited Run has been around and started the independent physical publishing thing many, many, many moons ago, and there are people who will collect every Limited Run games release and not necessarily the entire collection. Whereas a Premium Edition Games, another company, we don't have the, you know, the legacy. So without the legacy, we're going for completionist collectors when we do something like a collection of games, which is why it's more important to focus on really, really cool releases. Like, I mean, we were all surprised on the diversity of Lonesome Village when it came out, when we just did pre-orders a couple weeks ago, and we're getting tons. I think it was like half for international, which is very unusual for us. International orders, which was wild. And the fact that they're a Mexican developer makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
We have our own collection coming out for pre-order day before Halloween, which at the time this recording is tomorrow, which is the Sunshine Anthology. But they're two games in the same world. This Camp Sunshine,
I'm enjoying the hell out of that game, man. I just love it.
Exactly. And that's so cool, too, because you're working on, and we didn't even promote it, a little awesome trifold here.
Yes.
And essentially, it's like a little camp trifold. Like, welcome to the camp.
Yeah, and then you got the map on the inside.
It's the map for the game, and kind of shows you can show yourself around. And it's those little things that, you know, because we go a little slower, we can get creative with things, and we don't have to like rush everything to pre-orders, like instant pre-orders all the time. And to us, it's a little more fun to go that way. And then we work on books. So, but yeah, it's a very interesting rabbit hole we just went down with collecting and physical.
Okay. if there's one thing that, Jeff and I just like to have fun with this stuff. So as long as it's fun.
Correct.
100%.
And actually, We just talked about the Switch being at the tail end. We could pivot to another thing that's been in the news recently. And it is the latest and greatest Switch, next newest Switch rumors. This one's been interesting because there's also blueprints along with it and a ton of rumors.
I'm learning as some of the audience is learning, because I've had my head in the sand the last week just working on my field guide stuff, I haven't really come up for air much. So let's hear it.
So the interesting thing with this one is it is called the Super Nintendo Play. That's what they're calling it. The big thing is that there is no dock, and I'm using quotation fingers for those listeners, but I feel like it'll connect to a TV in a different means than a dock. That's my thought on it, is that it'll probably just connect directly to the TV. The interesting thing is the Super Nintendo Play, it will have cartridges, is what they're all saying, so it'll be backward compatible, essentially, in theory, but three screens, Tristan. Three screens. And from what it looked like in the blueprints, it opens up to a DS type of thing. So my theory is, just looking at the stuff, would be that when you plug it into the TV, not on a dock, that actual handheld is the controller, and there's a screen, and then the TV is the other screen.
Yeah.
Kind of. And then when you open it up in handheld mode, you got the two screens for the... And then when you play the Switch games, since they're single screen games, it does one of the screens, the touch screen, whichever one that is, probably the bottom one. So I think that would be a unique thing. That's the newest and latest and greatest. The Super Nintendo Play is the
I've got a couple of very, just like first reactions to hearing that news. Well, number one, that name. They're putting it on a tee, baby. Like it'll hit the nostalgia notes I'm just, the name will sell that thing. Number two,
and they call their theme park Super Nintendo World.
Yeah.
So right. I'm just saying it's on with their brand theming. So that was a good rumor. These rumors came out of Korea, a Korean leaker, by the way.
So number two, the fact that, it's got three screens and it's so versatile, that's very in line with Nintendo and giving, developers all these fun things to work with. So
the other thing that we didn't talk about is, I'm showing this thing, but it's going to have Super Nintendo buttons. The Super Famicom colors is what the rumor was. And it goes in alignment with, I think it was Paper Mario 1000 Year Door, the remake. On the tutorials, the A button was red.
No kidding.
And that's what they're going with, so it's the same. So they're like, in the first party Nintendo games, they're already starting to use the branding for the new console. That's what people are rumoring. I feel like that's a leap. But I do like coincidences, because a lot of times in gaming, there is no coincidence. Feel jealous because, being a third party Nintendo publisher, we won't tend to get any of the big stuff, because the major companies will be the ones that'll get the dev kits early. It won't be a premium edition games, but it would be super cool if this was true, though, having the two screen again, which also lends itself to 3DS and DS ports.
Yes. Gosh, I didn't even think about that. That's what a library they can pull from.
Well, imagine, like, they just announced the Game Center CX HD collection. They could do a Super Nintendo Play version with two screens.
My gosh,
which would be cool. Like, it's just, there's so much opportunity there. And, it's just Nintendo doing its own thing, too, because no other console is going to have the two screens. I don't know. I think it is the most Nintendo thing that they could do. The fact that it's backward compatible is good. Means that I won't quit, because if it's not backward compatible, I am only buying like first party stuff.
Yeah.
And whatever, as a publisher we release. But I am not going all in, because the Switch will be my swan song. But if it continues, then Switch and the next thing all become one, essentially.
Yeah. Which, let's hope. Let's hope.
I love it. And wouldn't it be cool? And this would be like, if I could have one request to Nintendo, if they do this three screen or double screen in handheld, is please allow DS and 3DS cartridges to work in it.
Mm.
Just like
I only have one request from Nintendo. Bring back Street Pass, please. Please bring back Street Pass.
That would be cool. I am surprised that with all these mobile app developments that they haven't done a Street Pass for the phone. I am surprised.
Nintendo is so frustrating in that way. They do like five things that make sense, and then they do like three things that just don't make sense. And doing away with Street Pass, such a popular thing on their 3DS platform. And then, you know, the Switch, people take their Switch everywhere. I don't mm-hmm. imagine that it was that expensive to keep up their servers for it. So what the heck? Bring it back. Come on, Nintendo. Yeah.
Well, and you just gave us another great, great transition to Nintendo.
Yeah, that is a
good transition. Wow. This is the one that you shared with me that I
just like.
And then, ironically, you know, us being on the third party side, we actually know a little bit of intel, so we can go a little deeper. So go ahead and talk to us about the what Nintendo has done this time, Tristan.
So I'm in a couple of Facebook groups. Like, we both have Nintendo Switch kiosks, and I've got Nintendo signage and like some neon signs and stuff like that. So just to educate myself and see what else is out there. Like, I joined a couple Facebook groups. One of which is I can't remember the name of it, but
it was kiosks, video game kiosks.
Yeah, kiosks and retail or whatever, something like mm-hmm. that. But a good friend of ours, Ben Wadley, actually is one of the main admins on that group. Super knowledgeable, just ridiculously like in tune with all the information and what's out there. But in that group, somebody, and I'm pretty sure I know who, was selling a Nintendo Switch kiosk amongst other kiosks. Like, he had a 360 kiosk, a Wii U kiosk, a Switch kiosk. Anyway, long story short, Nintendo, like they like to do, sent a cease, what it was it essentially a cease and desist, telling them that they need to take that post down. So they
took down the entire group, right? The whole group is gone.
Is it gone? No wonder I can't find it. That makes sense. Group,
and they created a Discord now. So that whole group got taken down. From what I'm tracking, because after you sent it to me, I did a little bit of rabbit hole digging. Okay, and I was part of that group part. Too. So the group's gone. And what Nintendo did was that their IP lawyers went down and messaged every single person that had a Switch kiosk post and gave them a cease and desist. Every single one that had a recent post.
Yeah.
So a bit crazy, man. So however that happened, that group is gone. They created a new one and they have a Discord channel now. So
it's incredible. I mean, like that group had tens of thousands of followers and for a reason. It was such a good resource. It reminds me of Nintendo Age, how that it was a repository.
Exactly what people were saying was.
And now all that information is
just
gone.
Like Nintendo Age.
Just boom. Nintendo Age. Gone.
It went away. It's gone. And isn't that crazy? Like, it's a repository of pricing for a lot of signage and kiosks and items and things. And, you know, having, you know, the Switch kiosk, I've had a Super Nintendo kiosk, the big metal one in the house too. Those are such cool historic items. And, you know, the fact is that now to Nintendo's defense, they actually send those for promotion to these game stores.
Yes.
I don't think that the game stores pay for them. And
no,
then the game stores
I don't
are
think
supposed
so.
To return them to Nintendo when they are done.
I know happened. For the longest time, like GameStop's, you know, their MO was just to like put it in the dumpster and then just like look the other way as like people go dumpster diving or whatever. And that's how all these things end up in collector hands. But I think
I do know that mine, the GameStop was going out of business. So the GameStop closed and then the employee somehow found it. I don't know if he paid GameStop for it or just grabbed it. But either way, then he met me last, because it was down in like Orlando, Florida. I was in Georgia at the time, and I met him in the middle and paid for it and everything, and did a monetary transaction for me.
Where I think it's a bridge too far for Nintendo to look the other way is where people are trying to profit off of it, off of something that they feel is not that person's property. You know, the GameStop going out of business, putting it in the dumpster, looking the other way, that doesn't GameStop's not selling it to somebody. They're not allowed to sell it to somebody.
Also, just like Target did not have the Switch in it or the television. It was just the piece of metal.
Yeah. That I bought. Yeah.
And that was it, just for the signage, essentially. So correct. I do know that the ones that had the season assist from Nintendo had the consoles with it. Even though I think one of them said it wasn't with it, but I don't think you can profit off of the actual proprietary console kiosk items.
Yeah. You know, it's just like if you've ever gone into a Target and seen the Mario and Flagpole display by the Nintendo products. There's a little sticker on there that says that it's property of Nintendo, and call such and such number Nintendo of America if you're getting rid of it. So, like, Target is not allowed to sell that to anybody, give that to anybody. And I think that is universal to, like, their modern kiosks and everything. I don't know. I don't think mine has a sticker on it, my Switch kiosk. I haven't seen that. But I bet moving forward, everything coming out of Nintendo that is retail signage or whatever will have something like that to that effect.
Well, and it's very similar to the developer kits for Switch and for PlayStation and for all those things. So, like, for example, for Sony, we could get the dev kit that looks like the space shuttle for PS5, the gray space shuttle looking one. All of those are tracked by serial number to the person. Yeah. So if I went and sold that, like, that serial number gets out in the wild, litigation could go against me. That's where if they really wanted to crack down, that's what they would do, is but serialize all the kiosks and sign them to a company. But they haven't been worried about that.
No. I think, you know, to your point earlier, is I think they're more worried about the software and the actual, like, retail hardware instead of the actual, like, metal frame or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there are modern ways of getting around that. Like, I've actually owned a Vita test kit that's essentially a brick, because you have to have a license from the company to be able to, you know, have it run. And if it expires, then you have to go and get another one. But, you know, the average person's not going to be able to do that. Developers will be able to do that. With this retail signage, especially like ones that are like populated with stuff like that, moving forward, they could do something like that. Maybe they already do something like that. I don't know. But obviously they're getting updated, because the Nintendo Switch kiosks, even before Mario Wonder came out, were updated so that people could play Mario Wonder on them. So they're being updated all the time.
Oh, yeah. And it's a very interesting thing. Do I think that Nintendo should crack down? I would say no, but it's their right, unfortunately.
Yeah, you can't complain.
They created it. And the thing is the Switch one, unlike any of the previous console kiosks, including other different systems, to me the Switch kiosk, along with like PS4 and Xbox One and those type of kiosks, are way, way, way cooler to me, because they're wireless, because the controllers are wireless. I can literally have my setup of my workstation and a kiosk and play Switch on my television through the kiosk, which the Super Nintendo one, I had to stand up and play.
Yeah, my Xbox 360 one, you know, it's got wired controllers, so you gotta stand there in front of the thing, like, you know, like a couple feet in front of the monitor.
Yeah, so it's completely impractical. And so the fact is the Switch kiosk is the most useful kiosk I've had, and plus then I have premium marquee signage on it, which makes it personalized, which is cool. But to me, that's the coolest one, because it goes hand in hand with the collection, and I was able to get one from a closed down GameStop, which was cool. Do I feel like that they should close down all of the options? I hope not, but you know, it is their right, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's their right, but at this point, you know, the shot's been fired across the bow. People know, or people who have one should know by now, because this news has swirled around, and it's out there now. So if you're dumb enough to go on Facebook or whatever and put your Nintendo hardware on there for sale and try and make a profit, I'm sorry. That's just that's an idiotic thing to do. That's just my opinion.
Especially until Nintendo forgets about it again.
Yeah, exactly. And Nintendo, you know, it doesn't cost them. It's a drop in the bucket for them. They've already got their legal team. And, you know, it costs them 10 cents to draw up a letter and tell you to cease and desist. So do you really want Nintendo's attention? I sure don't.
No. And the interesting thing is, though, is that I do know I got mine for $100 back in the day, a couple $100. And now I know that the ones that we saw were a couple $1,000.
Yeah.
That means the price is only going to skyrocket. Because back in the day, like, the kiosks weren't super expensive because they're awkward. They're big. Yeah. But as things become scarce, as people start collecting the unique oddities, like stuff like my Red 10 arcade, that thing's thousands of dollars now.
Yeah.
And I got it for $100 again. And it's, you know, getting in at the right time is also important. But now it's going to skyrocket. And the thing is like you and me, those are staying. Those are a fixture of the game.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that goes without saying, but doubly so because we work for Premium Edition, who, you know, we're putting out Switch games. It's part of our blood now. So,
well, and to me, it's like it would be something that would be in the Premium Edition games offices, essentially, once we're all done moving around and stuff. There'll be an office space, and that's where that goes to show off games. Like,
for sure.
I know. I think it was Josh on our team was jokingly saying, you should bring that with you to conventions. And I'm like, no.
What?
Yeah.
Hell no.
He was like insane. I'd be like, no. Like, it would be cool. It would be awesome to show.
That's a horrible idea. I mean, that'd be cool as shit to be able to have that at our booth. But no, man.
Not in my personal one. Hey, if Nintendo wants to sell us or send us a portable one that we could realistically take around the conventions, we would absolutely show off.
Jeez, man, I can't even imagine.
No, there's no way, man.
Yeah,
You got anything else in the news? Because otherwise we got some Switch Online games we could talk about.
Stuff in the news, nothing crazy. I mean, aside, you know, you already touched on the, like, Best Buy and Walmart going away from physical, mm-hmm. but that's a huge topic in and of itself. Like, the market trend going away from physical goods.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Anyway, what was on Switch Online?
So I haven't logged on in a month or so on Switch Online. There's a bunch of new games that popped up, and I kind of highlighted the good ones that I thought would be pretty, you know, great releases. So Game Boy Advance, they released Metroid Fusion and Kirby and the Amazing Mirror, which is a Metroidvania, mind you. And all three of the other Super Mario Advanced games on there. So those are cool, and I think they had Fire Emblem as well, like the original Fire Emblem. So it is a pretty big one. Super Nintendo was pretty meh, though. It was like a Tetris style game, or Puyo Puyo game, or whatever, and Harvest Moon, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
The NES went to Famicom, goodness, and they had a Kunio Field game where it's like one of those River City Ransom, but like there's a bunch of mini games in there and you
can eat.
It's called Field Day on the translation, but it was cool. Joy Mech Fight, which is the fighter from the Famicom.
Oh, hell yeah, Joy Mech Fight. Oh, that's a deep cut. Mm-hmm. Nice.
And Mystery Tower, which is one that Areno played on Game Center CX.
I probably saw that. I just don't remember.
And speaking of Game Center CX, did you see that that they did the brand new translated by official translated YouTube with the creator Smash Brothers and Areno playing through the history of Nintendo going year by year?
I did see that. And I am so hopeful for what's to come. Hopefully that's not just it.
Yeah.
Because for us starved Game Center CX fans in the West, oh man, give me more. Give me more.
That was amazing. What was that? Three-parter? And like they literally went through and they were playing. It wasn't NES games, it was arcade games. It was like all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
really, it's so much fun. I mean, Areno is just such an awesome personality and like a lovable guy. So
exactly. Really original Game Boy released the Oracle of Ages and Seasons.
Okay.
Which I've been waiting on. So that was cool. N64 was like N64, but they did have Excitebike 64 that was released. So and they had like a Mario Party and some other stuff released, which was I'm not really interested in. Genesis, though, probably had the coolest four games that I felt like were really cool to add to the library. Revenge of Shinobi, which is excellent.
Yeah.
Bulls and Ghosts, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And then two very expensive collector's games, Landstalker.
Okay.
And then Crusader of Senti.
Senti, yes. That's it. Yeah, that's one. And that excites me whenever games that are out of reach for the normal collector can actually like play those games. Which, you know, Harvest Moon, you know, it's whatever. It's the original one. But that's also a really expensive title on the SNES. So that's cool that it's accessible now.
So the interesting piece is we could make some of those or any of those BS homework in the future, too.
Sure.
Because I've been wanting to play Crusader of Senti. I've been wanting to play Landstalker forever. Mm-hmm. And they're really fun games. And I've never gotten out of the intros for any of the games. honestly, I've never beaten Oracle of Ages and Seasons. Like, I just play them for a while.
Never played them.
Never go back. They're spiritual successors to Link's Awakening. They're excellent.
I mean, Link's Awakening's. I played the crap out of it whenever I was a kid, but I never felt like I needed more of that formula. Just personally, I'm not the biggest Zelda fan, but if there's a new Zelda out, I will play it. Nowadays,
I'm a huge Zelda fan. I mean, I got the
choice. I know it.
I'm a huge one. The fact that Kirby and the Amazing Mirrors and Metroidvania, I didn't realize that. So I think that one I want to dig into when I get a little time. Didn't know that, but I think that's the one with the multicolored Kirby's or something. I can't really remember. But
I don't know.
Sounds cool. But those are all the online. That's a lot of bang for the buck there with that plus finishing out Mario Kart and all those different aspects. So, I mean, it's pretty cool, man. And then I did look at my Humble Bundle for the month, and it's a bunch of horror-based stuff, but there's, like, The Quarry and House of Ashes are both, like, movie-style video games. Mm. Then there was another game that was on my radar that was there that I definitely picked, which is Metal Hellsinger. And it's supposed to be cool as hell. It's supposed to be a badass game. Outside of that, though, there are a bunch of other ones. There's, like, this one where you play as, like, a marionette in a puppeteer world, like in the circus. That one that you definitely know about. That one was available for free for Humble. Okay. So there's – and there's a few other games that were kind of cool. Really not a ton of games, though, for the Humble. We'll see what comes up next month for the Humble. Getting three, though, is worth like $10 to $12 that it is a month. It's not bad. It's a couple dollars a game. So I'm definitely still supporting that methodology.
I would love to hear like how many games are in your Steam library, by the way.
A lot.
And I know it's shifted because you test games. So but still, I would love to hear.
Well, I'll look it up right now. Go to my library. Let me see. So just in the main library of stuff that I get from like Humble and everything is 186. Overall I have 700 others.
Nice.
So I have almost 900 games on my Steam right now.
Oh, Super RPG Time. So I looked it up like where my copy is and I found out why I haven't got it yet. I bought another game also, but it was a pre-order. Uh-huh.
Good job.
A Dodonpachi game. So that's why I haven't got it yet.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah, I think I got that Dodon Patchy game as well. I just bought it individually.
Mm.
But yeah, it's very, very fun though, finding random stuff. But, like, Steam is insane though. And the thing is that, like, without doing like BS homework, which is a good segue, you know, we won't have time to play stuff. And, you know, this bullshit homework of this time, man, this one was an interesting one to say the least. And so, I warned you.
Yeah,
and so the bullshit homework game for those listeners before we dig is Midnight Vassal Succubus. The question is, did you play it the safe for work or did you dance with the devil, Tristan?
Do you want me to lie to you or do you want me to tell the truth?
Ah, you got to tell the truth.
Yeah, I played it in not safe for work mode. Just because you told me not to. It's like telling me not to eat the forbidden fruit, you know? So
Yeah.
Uh-oh, I think you froze.
Did my camera froze again? Yeah.
Oh, no.
And my mouth's open. That's amazing.
Well, I'll put a bandana over your mouth or something like that. Make you look like a bandit.
Give me a beard or something, like draw a beard on me.
Yeah, there we go.
Hilarious. So I guess me being in the other room doesn't matter because I'm right next to the extender now.
Oh, well.
It's all
good. So I played it in not safe for work mode just because I saw the aesthetic of the game. Yes, it's just like Castlevania 2. Simon's
yes,
Quest.
It is.
I mean, you know, you blink era. If you look at it cross-eyed, you would swear that it's the other game. But anyway, I just wanted to see how that could possibly be not safe for work. As soon as you go to those loading screens, you're like, oh, that's why.
So that's the interesting piece. So let me lay the groundwork and I'll tell you a little secret behind the loading screens. It's great. So Midnight Castle Succubus, a succubus issues threats against humanity once every 100 years when men die and young women disappear one by one. A succubus hunter visits a cursed city under the moonlight. And they rescue abducted girls and defeat the succubus. And so basically there's main weapons, a leather whip, a thorn whip, a chain, flame, ice, and magic whips. There's a bunch of different types of whips. And a ton of sub weapons, including the scythe, the boomerang, bomb, clock cross. There are hardcore scenes. So when there's damage while clothed, HP becomes one and she gets naked when you get damaged. I didn't know if you knew this.
I didn't know that.
She gets damaged without the clothes. She falls prey to the monsters, which essentially means hentai scenes. There are four different difficulty levels, easy, normal, hard, and insta-death. And then essentially there is a safe for work version. So the interesting thing is that you mentioned as you're going through, there's transitional scenes between going from level to level. There'll be certain ones where they're showing hentai-based scenes.
Yeah.
You go to those scenes, those are actually showing you the route you need to go with a key to unlock a door to save them.
Yep.
So essentially, if you don't have a key and you go to those scenes, you got to go a different route. You got to go a different way so you can go fight a boss or hunt down a key. So how far did you end up getting, Tristan?
I beat the third boss. I got the chain whip. I got I saved the third girl. And I'm in this town that's clearly under control of the succubus. Everyone's like, oh, what a peaceful town this is. Isn't this a wonderful town? Like, something's weird here.
That's fun. And so the cool thing about this game is that you have a lot of tropes into the Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest, where you have the towns, you have all the different aspects where you go underground, you go into the water, you go do these different things. The cool thing is that you have a bunch of different abilities that you can buy for your character from different, like, old men. And as you mentioned, getting different, you got the chain whip, which I actually never got the chain whip, which is pretty fun.
Oh, really?
Kind of skipped it on accident somehow. I knew where it was, but I couldn't find it again. I never got back to it. But the interesting thing is, as I was playing through, you get to and you fight the succubus. And that's really cool because you finally go through. It's a long battle because, you know, I was a little bit, I think I was missing a whip or something too, because you can get the magic whip before you fight her, and I did not have it. And so I did this long, drawn out battle, finally beat her. And then it pulls a Castlevania Symphony of the Night on you.
Oh, really?
And the Succubus's Curse happens, where you get to play as the Succubus as an alternate character.
Oh, cool.
And then it separates seven or six or seven of her body parts that you have to find, a la Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest. You have to find all her parts. But the cool thing is that, number one, when you find each piece, the Succubus gets an extra ability, whether she could do a double jump then or can
fly, that's cool,
wall jump, fly, all these different things. So then it opens up and adds more and more replayability, and the levels are designed as such where you will like go past stuff and you're like, oh, I can fly now, and then it opens up to a whole nother section.
I did recruit a thief too. I just remembered I recruited a thief that can like throw knives, but yep. I don't know how to use it. I couldn't figure out how to like switch.
So if you pause the game,
okay,
there's the support menu, and you click the support menu, you can toggle them on, and then you get two characters on the screen.
I was just like assuming that it was like Castlevania 3, where like you press select and it like swaps them out or something.
No, the swap out button is between the main character and the Succubus later.
Okay,
you can swap out them on the fly. No, but your helper character stays on the screen the whole time and shoots, like the thief will shoot knives, and also the thief will also show when there is an item on the screen, such as a health or a crown.
Cool. I got three crowns, by the way. Three crowns.
Yeah. As you get crowns and health items, because you will end up meeting four characters. You meet a thief, a knight, a mage, and like a little monk or something that'll give you life. But as you go through, you can swap between them. So you can go to the support thing. You can take off the one and put the one on. So that way that character will support you and be on the screen. But as you get power-ups, you can then have two on the screen or three on the screen. Apparently four. I got to the point where I had three helper characters. So the knight – so like the thief will shoot knives and will help you with attacks. The knight will hone in on a character and like go across the screen.
Nice.
The monk will, if you press down in the attack and hold down in the attack button or something, it will give you health. And then the mage shoots like fireballs, and that's almost near the end of the game. I got to the point where I had the fireballs, the attack, and the knives going. The knight attack and the knives all going at the same time. It was freaking chaos. It was awesome. So eventually you turn into these like long drawn out boss battles, which the first few in the Succubus's second map are very challenging. But then once you start getting all these extra updates and upgrades, the game like becomes super fun just to play and just crush everything. And so I spent probably 80% of my time getting to the first or second post Succubus boss. And then after that, the rest of the game, I like cruised through it. Like after we had talked and we were like, that's the homework game, I played it again and I beat it in the evening on Sunday.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing about the game. Like it's so like inconspicuously good. It seems like it's going to be a really simple game, but it's really complex.
Well, exactly. Like it's a very, very well thought out and created game. Like that's this is a game that I wouldn't mind signing for premium for the Safe for Work version.
Sure, yeah. The other version would not be in tune with our releases, for sure.
I don't think so, but...
And honestly, like, it doesn't need to be there, let's be honest. It's really weird that it's there, but you know, whatever. However they want to sell their games, more power to them.
So the difference between the not Safe for Work and the Safe for Work versions are all the hentai scenes. That's one. And then when you go save a maiden, like, and it's not safe for work, there's hentai, pixelated hentai stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's just a picture of a princess and you just go and save her. So there's nothing, she's not being harmed in any way. And then there's no scenes in the safe for work version. And then the other thing is that a lot of the bosses are redone in pixelated and they're usually like these type of like mystical beasts and stuff that you fight, which they look really cool. The Safe for Work versions look awesome. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that the Safe for Work one is really, really cool too. And it could be its own version. But of course, the not Safe for Work is ridiculous. And apparently this developer has a ton of other games that they've released because they do all these hentai things. And I mean, there's Princess and Conquest and Scarlet Maiden and Orc Massage.
Mm. Orc Massage.
Buddha Fix.
Oh, no.
Venture Seas, Snow Days. There's one called Castle in the Clouds DX. That one actually looks very similar to Midnight Castle Succubus. Okay. Like, yeah, it's like very, very similar to the pixel art. So that one and Scarlet Maiden apparently are all ones. A Tower and Sword of Succubus is another one. So there's like, apparently it's like a little trilogy. Succubus series is what it's called. So
gotcha.
A little trilogy of games. But this game, though, honestly, like without the hentai stuff is like, and I give it like an A game. It is really good.
Yeah, I was thinking the entire time I was playing it, I'm like, this is a high B, but like hearing all the extra stuff that I don't even know about. Yeah, that's an A title.
It's an A title. You add the hentai to it, and I can't play it on a TV, then it drops it down to a B or a C.
Sure, yeah, it just doesn't need to be there. It's completely unnecessary.
Yeah. A good game is a good game, though, and it's still a great title. There's nothing I could play and also with my family around.
No.
So there's that. So I would that knocks it down a tier. But the fact that it has a safe for work version, technically, if we contacted this developer and all those games in the trilogy had a safe for work version, you could do the Succubus series for a physical.
Yeah, as long as we don't repeat a Rockstar Games situation where like the code is still there somehow, we'd have to have them remove the code.
Yeah, no, it would have to be completely modified. Graphics, but. Yeah, but either way, though, like, definitely Midnight Castle Succubus is definitely an interesting game, Tristan, an interesting game. But the fact is that, Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest is a video game bullshit specialty and doing it spooky time for Halloween.
I love that game. I always have. Like, I love that game. Have I told you that?
A good one.
Do you have any video game cheat codes or anything like memorized? Yeah, everyone knows the Konami code, but I mean, like Castlevania 2, I played it so much that I have a code memorized from like the continue screen. CODS K26K RXKN VLJK. I'll never forget that. Like it's tattooed to my brain somehow.
Nice. It's classic though, man. It's classic. Yeah. That's awesome. So Tristan, since, Midnight Castle was technically not a random game, even though I did play it randomly, did you want to pick a game or do you want to go back to the randomizer of Steam?
There actually was another, it's too bad this isn't like a couple of weeks from now because it'd be an easy choice. Mario RPG remake is coming.
We're going to do
that. Yeah, that has to be one because that's just what I'm going to be playing at the time. But I would love to go back to like an arcade game. And, I actually told you that I've been playing some stuff lately on my Neo Geo cabinet. Are you familiar with Neo Turf Masters by any chance?
Of course. Yeah, I played that a long time ago.
Okay. Gotcha. I don't know. That one's a little too shallow to play for video game bullshit, I think. But
Should I go to the Steam Deck then
and
go
to my think so.
Hey, no, I'm saying I can go to CoinOps and do randomizer in CoinOps.
Let's do that. Arcade. I'm definitely in an arcade game mood.
Okay. So I am loading up CoinOps Legends 3. You can hear different stuff and all I have to do is I think if I hit X, it will go random. So I'm just hitting it, and it goes between DJ Boy to Gradius to Mark of the Wolves, Death Smiles.
Cool. So
should I hit it? How many times should I hit it? Give me a number between 1 and 5, and I will hit it that many times.
I was thinking 4, so let's go 4.
Okay. Number 1, this is G-Hex. 2, Devastators. 3, Mushihime Sami Futari.
Oh, I like that one.
All right, here is the game. Breakthrough. You heard of Breakthrough?
Breakthrough, yeah, okay. Uh-huh.
And I think it has an NES port as well.
Yeah, so, it is. If it's what I think it is, those are fun games.
So are you good? It's a side-scrolling game where it looks like a DeLorean and you're shooting. Should we play Breakthrough or should I hit it one more time?
Up to you, man. Up to you.
Your call.
Yeah, maybe that one's a little too shallow. So let's hit it one more time.
Okay. I got a game called Dynagears.
Dynagears. Okay.
Dynagears, which looks like an action platformer. Dynagears.
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 Oh, that looks really cool.
By Sammy, apparently.
Yeah, heck yes. Yeah, arcade run and gun.
Arcade run and gun. You said you were playing Metal Gear. I've never played it. I've never played Dynagears. I played Breakthrough. Never played Dynagears. So that's cool.
Looking forward to it.
That's what we'll play for bullshit. That's what I was saying is like technically the last time we didn't do it live on the thing. So with Midnight Castle. So now we'll play Dynagears for it, which will be awesome. That'll be a fun one to play.
Oh, yeah.
Heck yeah. I'm looking forward to it, man.
Arcade game from 1993.
So have you been playing anything or has it just been book work right now?
Just book work and the occasional break. Like, I fired up my Neo Geo MVS and I was playing some Metal Gear X. Yeah. Metal Slug X. There's a Metal Gear collection out that I've got on the brain.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah, it's and then you mentioned Super Mario RPG coming out. GameStop has a pre-order with a button system. There's buttons that come with the pre-order at GameStop. So that's where I'm pre-ordering.
That's what I'm going to be getting then.
I don't typically pre-order. So I asked them, I'm like, well, what do you have for pre-order bonuses? And they said, oh, we have all these buttons. And I was like, done.
Because
I remember
I'm going to have to get the cards.
I remember getting all the Nintendo Power cards back in the day. So.
Did you hear about the freaking Mario Wonder pre-order from Walmart?
Yep, and there was a sealed card pack, and then the I think it's the Mario elephant.
Yeah, elephant Mario. It's like
people were paying $1,000 for it or some ridiculousness.
So stupid.
So what hilarious. The hell? That's awesome. Like it's so ridiculous that people do that stuff. I caught our premium buddy Barry talking about, I'm going to get one of every card. And they're like, well, you're going to have to buy them all randomly, every single one, and open them all and hope you get them all. And it's going to cost him thousands of dollars to do that.
Yeah, good luck, Barry.
like I don't need to be that type of
better him than me.
Yeah, exactly. I don't ever need to be that type of a collector. That's for sure. I just opened up Zero and I'm looking at him with his Zero Saber, his Z Sabers. Really cool. Yeah, this is a really high quality looking little guy. It's I don't know if he's sun faded because he's probably in that place forever. Or what? But it definitely is like not bright red. Even though the printing on it's bright white red, but his colors are like a little bit muted. Maybe it's because it's a glow-in-the-dark thing or something. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe it's the glow-in-the-dark stuff. Interesting, though, on the back is that they have Zero Mega Man, a glow-in-the-dark Mega Man, a Mega Man X, and then Skull Man is the only bad guy.
Skull Man? That's the only one.
Yeah, like very odd. So, very interesting. But I'm looking forward to playing some Dynagears, dude. I think it is, we could call her a do.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. We had some good topics to talk about, just stuff that came out of left field for us. So
yeah, wild stuff. And then have an idea for a little premium thing we can do after this and it'll be fun.
All right.
Little premium video, do some crazy shit. If my video works, that's it.
Yeah. We'll have to reset.
Yeah, dude. But anyways, everybody, thank you for listening. We will be playing Dynagears for next time, and we will catch you later.
Later, guys.